Thanks. Okay, I hope you can all hear me. If not, let me know. And please feel free to interrupt at any times with questions. So the topic is GTK for application developers. And I've, when I submitted that abstract, I wasn't really clear on what I was going to do. So when I actually sat down to prepare this talk, I figured that I wanted to try and just show some examples of what's possible with current GTK. And I hope I can convey with these examples that it's really easy now to build GNOME 3 style applications as we expect them to be, with the header bar and with nice transitions and all that stuff that you see in clocks and weather and these applications. With GTK 3.10, really most of the building blocks for that are in place, and it doesn't take that much work to get something like that off the ground. And I will show that in a series of examples. Leonard had his 9 steps yesterday, so I'm going to show 9 examples. I hope I get through them. And at the end, we'll have something that looks a bit like an application. It is fairly limited, but it does something, so that's hopefully inspiring. And I did not prepare any slides for this. Instead, I decided I wanted this material to be available for the longer term, so I wrote it all as actual runnable examples. They are all available in the GTK source tree as of sometime last week. And the text that I wrote around it is all available in the GTK API documentation. We have a tutorial section there, and I added a new chapter to it. So you can look all that up online if you want. It's available as of last week. And we'll see how well that actually works for a talk. It's an experiment, so let me know if it doesn't work well, and we'll try to do something else. So, but before we step into the examples, maybe it's worth stepping back a little bit and ask what actually is an application. We learned from Leonard yesterday how he thinks an application should look in the Star Trek future. It's all a single bundle that you can just download and run it without installation, and it'll all be very cool. That's not quite where we are today. So as of today, applications still have a number of things that need to be spread around the file system. And I've just put up a little list here of the things that are there. Obviously, it's the application binary itself, which we expect to go in user bin. Then applications need to have a desktop file that's pretty firmly established so that the shell can actually display it nicely. And it also needs an icon for that, obviously. And then every non-trivial applications will have some settings. And for that, we need a setting schema. And then there might be miscellaneous other resources like UI files and whatnot, which you would ordinarily also spread around the file system. But we actually have resources nowadays. So if you pay attention to the examples, you'll see that we actually get to put all those other resources inside the binary itself. So that's already a pretty good step towards the single file application future that we want to get to. And yeah, down here, I'll talk a little bit about all the stuff that I'm hoping to touch on the examples. I'm not going to read the whole list here. You can see there's a whole lot of stuff to go through. So let's get to it and start building up our application. So the first thing to know about, we're going to use GTK application here, which is the application class that GTK provides for that. Yes? Yes, I know. I just wanted to have the idea of one line main function, so I was willing to accept that leak. So let's not dwell too much on that. The one thing to take away here is that the main function is really not where the action is. It's just the one line that really just creates an instance of our application class, and then we call gapplication run on it, and we give it the command line parameters, and that's it. Not much else to it. All the logic of the application and all the handling of command line options and all that is happening in the application class. Scrolling down a little bit, here's a very trivial application class. So we do subclass GTK application for that. That's the intended way of using it. And we use the usual gobject boilerplate for that. And we don't really implement anything here yet. There's several entry points to applications. There's, for instance, if you just run the application on a command line without giving it any arguments, then we have an entry point that's called activate here, which is what is called when you just run it by itself. And I have a kind of trivial application implementation of that here, which just creates a new window and then presents it. The other entry point that I have implemented here is opening files. So if you run the application and give it file names on the command line, we'll call a different entry point, which is called open, and that gets an array of files. And in this implementation here, not much is happening. We just, again, we create a window, and then we call this open function for each of the files, and magic might happen in that function or not. And that's about it. The one thing to maybe briefly pause on here and look at is that creating an application subclass, you always want to have an application ID. That's kind of important because that's a very central concept in the world of gapplication. You really want to have an application ID which is used as the bus name, and it's used as the ideally used as the name for the desktop file and all those things. So we really need a unique identifier for the application. And that's this ID here. The last part of this fairly trivial skeleton implementation is that you saw further up that at some places I created windows, and those windows were actually instances of this class example app window, which is a subclass of GTK application window. And again, this is an entirely empty implementation. It does nothing but the necessary skeleton work. Yes?
So I just have a question about your last slide with the one line init.
Yes.
Main. What do you do about get text? Because you have to do bind text domain. Is that handled for you in gapplication automatically, or should I just put that in my main as well?
I totally glanced over that here, but I guess you would have to do some setup work for that in main, yeah.
Okay, so gapplication doesn't do that automatically. There's no magic it does.
There's no magic there, no. No.
Okay. Thanks.
We might add magic in the future. I don't know that, but
yeah,
so maybe things are changing there. But for now, if you wanted internationalization, you would have to set that up there, yes. Okay. Last thing that I have in this initial example is that we also want an icon and a desktop file, obviously. I created some marble-like icon there, playing with the GIMP for 5 minutes. And the desktop file here is also very bare bones. I just put in @bindir here just to cheat a little bit because I'm running my, I will run this application in a minute, and I'm actually running it uninstalled. So I have to actually patch the right bindir in here to make that work. And let me actually switch to running this example now. So I should say first, this is inside the GTK source tier. There's an examples directory, and if you look in that, there's 9 subdirectories here which contain the examples that I'm going through here. And right now I'm stepping into the first one. And it's already compiled, so I'm just running it. And boom, there's my application window. It's not very exciting. Admittedly, it doesn't really contain anything. It doesn't even have a window title. But notice that the shell already picks up the desktop file here and finds the icon, which is because I cheated a little bit and put the icon in home local share icons somewhere. And I put the desktop file there as well, so just that this works here. In real life, you would, of course, install these files in user share somewhere and have it work that way. So, it's not very impressive, but admittedly, we didn't write much code either. And while there's not much to see, this already is a full-blown gapplication which has a presence on the bus. It has single instance characteristics. And it technically also can open files. So right now, I just activated it by running it without arguments, but I could give it an argument like this. And, well, nothing else happens because we haven't implemented the open function yet, but at least it accepts the argument. And things are set up for the next step. So step two is, this window was too empty. So, yes? Yeah, it's annoying, isn't it? Is Leonard here? No, Leonard is not here. Find Leonard for that. Okay, so next step is to get some content in the window. For that, we're using something that, if you went to Tristan's talk just before lunch, he probably talked about templates, or maybe he didn't, did he?
Yes.
Okay, so we're using templates here. This is all work that Tristan did in the last year or two, and it finally landed in GTK. So what's a template? A template is like a UI file, like those files you're used to editing with Glade or creating with Glade. And it looks like just like that. You can see the beginning of the file here. The main difference between a template and a regular UI file is that a template actually defines a complex widget like a container with internal structure, and you can use Glade for populating that instead of having to manually write an init function that does GTK container add of this, GTK box pack start of that, and handily really writes a lot of code for populating your constructing your complex UI. You can do all that in Glade now, which is really, really nice. And so here's our initial template. As you can see, we are defining the example app window class that I showed earlier. And we just pack a few things in there. First of all, we set some useful properties like the window title and the default size. Then we put a box in there and we populate the box with a header bar and a stack, GTK stack. And in inside the header bar, we have a stack switcher. And we'll see this widget in action in a minute. But first, I wanted to stop briefly and show how we actually get to use this template. So for now, we've just written this UI file. And to make use of it for actually defining the application window class, we use a function called GTK widget class set template from resource, which binds this template to our subclass. And I'll talk about the resource bit in a minute. But that's the first step. The other step is that when we actually instantiate this class and we create an application window, in the init function for that, we have to call GTK widget init template to actually use the template and populate our instance. So that's the two steps for using a template. And I touched on that earlier. We're using resources here. And that means that we actually take this window.ui file that I showed earlier, and we turn it into a resource bundle that we then link into our application binary. And that's done using a tool called glib compile resources, and glib compile resources takes its input, like we tell it what actually to compile into that resource bundle by writing this little XML snippet up there. And I'm not going to get too much into it. If you want to really look into that, you can check out the examples in the repository where it's all hooked up with the makefile and you can see it actually running and working. And yeah, let me switch back to actually running this example now. So we are at stop two. And I'm running it again. And a little better. So as you can see, the window is not entirely empty at this point. We have the window title. And if you look at the top of the window, you can kind of see the empty header bar up there, which is not really prominent, but that's going to get populated in the next steps. For now, this is just our basis for further work. Okay, step three is we want to actually populate this stack widget that we put in place in our template. I pointed that out. And we want to, I told you that we can already pass file names on the command line. So the next step is that we actually want to open these files and show them. For that, we use a few new features here that I wanted to mention. Our example window class now gains a private struct, which you can see defined up there, and it contains just one member currently, this stack pointer there. And there's a new way, actually this changed recently. The way it used to be for private structs is that you used to call gtype class at private in your class init function. And we turned that around this cycle and we actually made that more declarative. So now the new way of doing this is that you use gdefine type with private, and that does all the magic behind the scenes. So you don't have to do anything anymore in your class init function for this. And instead you can do something else in your class init function, which is now you can use this somewhat magic thing here called GTK widget class bind template child private. That's quite a mouthful. I think that's a contender for the longest function name in GTK. I couldn't really help it. It needs to be that long to fit all the naming patterns and everything else. So what does this do? There's just quite a few things behind the scenes. So we give it the example app window name, and we give it the name of a variable stack there. And what's happening behind the scene is that this instructs GTK that because we use the private variant of this function, it knows that it actually is supposed to look in the private struct that's associated with example app window, so example app window private. And should look for the stack member in it, and it should populate that with a widget from the template that is called stack. So this is all a little magic, but the upshot is that when we get to our instance init function, we can rely on the fact that the stack member in our private struct test is pointing to the widget that we wanted to point to. So there's not a lot of hassle with manually looking those up.
When do we get GDK defined text with a private template?
I don't know. That's a question for Emanuele. Okay, so this was just preparatory work for actually doing some actual logic here. I'm not going to explain this in detail. This is the code to create a scroll window, create a text view inside it, and open the file that was passed as an argument, and populate the text view with the contents of that file. The one thing that's worth pointing out here is somewhere in the middle there's a line where we call GTK stack add titled. That is where we actually add the scrolled window as a page in our stack, so to speak. And we give it a unique identifier. For that, we just use the base name of the file. And then there's another argument, which is the display title to actually show in the UI. We'll see that it will be obvious once I've run it for you. And yeah, the one thing I want to say about that is that the display title is obviously going to be displayed by this stack switcher, which is the row of tabs. But we don't have to touch this stack switcher at all here, because the stack switcher is getting all this data that it needs to know how many tabs to display and what to show in them by looking at the stack that it's associated with.
That white on light gray does not look good at all.
Yeah. That's a theme problem. So I'm switching back to running this now. And wow, that's magic. Now we actually have content here. This looks like a real application all of a sudden. Let me make this a little better and actually give it two files.
Is this the recommended way of using GTK stack? Like, I got the impression that it's more for switching between different parts of the UI of an application rather than how you would use like tabs or like a key edit
thing. I don't know. That's a question for the designers, I think. I mean, I think it works fairly well for this case. And I'm sure the designers will tell me off if I did something wrong here, but it works well. So a few things to say here is that you see the stack switcher now. That's the two buttons up there. Those get created by the stack switcher. And yeah, well, the content of the file that you see here obviously comes from the function I just showed you. And we can actually switch between them, and that works. So that's GTK stack and GTK stack switcher in action. And yeah, I'll just keep moving on unless there's questions. Feel free to interrupt me at any time. Next step is we want to build this out a little more and add an application menu. I don't need to say too much here about what an application menu is and how it works. So I'll dive right into how you do this. It also gets specified by a GTK Builder UI file, like this one here. And I don't think I should say too much here in details about the syntax. You can see that we actually create a menu element, which is, well, a menu, not surprisingly. Then there can be sections in there and items, and the items have a couple of attributes here. We set a label, which is what is going to show up in the UI. And then we have an action for each item, which is what's going to get activated when you actually click on that menu item. And to actually use this UI file now in our application, we need to call GTK application set app menu. And a good place to do that is in the startup vfunc of gapplication. I mentioned earlier that a gapplication has a number of different entry points, like it has an activate, it has an open, or you could activate it by directly calling an action. And no matter how you activate it or how you start it, there's always a startup vfunc that gets called no matter what. So that's a good place to do things that you want to happen in all of the cases. And we use it here to actually get our UI file that I just showed. And then we get the menu model that the builder constructed from it. And we call GTK application set app menu, which does all the work. Behind the scenes, this this puts stuff on the bus, on the session bus, and the shell picks it up from there. So there's a lot of things that are happening behind the scenes. All of that is work of Ryan. Right. I did not really get into the difference between primary and secondary instance, but you're right. So Ryan points out that the G application has this concept of single instance, which I briefly mentioned earlier. And that means there's a primary instance, which is actually fully flashed running application. And if you start it again on a command line, it's not going to open a second binary, but just talk to the primary instance. And the startup function, I said it gets run no matter what. But it only gets run in the primary instance, right? If you're starting it for a second time and it doesn't actually launch something, then startup would not be called.
Which is why you should put all your stuff here in the second name, so you don't waste time.
Okay, well that's a fair point. Going back to this, I said earlier when I showed the UI file that we mentioned applications, like each item has an associated action. And so we need to somehow bring these actions into being, and that's what's happening actually four lines up here. We call a function called gActionMap at action entries, which is also a lot of work that's happening behind the scenes. If I scroll up a little bit, you can actually see the app entries array that we pass in there. This looks fairly similar to what we have had in GTK for the longest time, which is a GTK action entry array. And this is just basically the same kind of idea translated into gAction instead of GTK action. So we are creating two actions here. One has the name preferences, and one has the name quit, which is the two names that you saw in the UI file before. And we also specify the activate callbacks here, like quit activated gets called when the quit action is activated, and preferences activated is called when the preference action is activated. Let's actually try that out. So I'm now into step four. And I hope that we actually have an application menu now. Yes, it's there. So the shell has successfully picked up the app menu here that we put on the bus. And it shows us the preferences and quit menu item. And I'll try to click on preferences. Nothing happens. That's because the preferences activated function that I adjust is empty so far. So nothing exciting is going on. But quit is fully functional. That just works. And I also briefly wanted to show that you may not have noticed it, but for the quit item, I actually specified a keyboard accelerator, a keyboard shortcut in the UI file, the expected one, Control Q. So I'm going to hit Control Q here, and that also works. So all of that is already hooked up. And the next step will be to make the preferences menu item actually do something. For that, I'm moving on to the next step, which is showing how preferences work. And we want our preferences obviously to be remembered from one run of the application to the next, so we're gonna use gSettings to remember them. And for using gSettings, the first step is always that you need a schema for your settings, which is another type of XML file that I'm showing here. This is a fairly minimal schema. It just has two settings in it. The one is a font, and the other is a transition type. There's some magic that you need to do, some magic incantations that you need to do to make use of the schema. You have to compile it. First, you have to like install this XML file in the right location, and then you call glib compile schemas to install it. Then we have some autoconf macros to make that a little easier if you're using AutoTools. So I'm not going to dive into the details of how to do that. Let's just assume that we can figure that out. And so now we have this schema in place, which means we can actually now use our settings. And for that, we need to call gSettings new to obtain an instance of our settings object. And the next thing we do is we use a very convenient functionality of gSettings, which is binding. So we have this settings key that I showed you earlier, which is about which was called transition. And we just bind that to, remember, prif stack is the is a pointer that points to the GTK stack widget that we have in our window somewhere. And GDK stack has a property that's called transition type. And now we just bind the setting to the property. And that's all we need to do to make the widget react to changes of the setting. And I think I can. Yeah, there's some magic here that I'm not going to get into right now. It's even better than I'm telling you. So let's let's see if I can actually make this work. So remember, we don't have a preference dialog yet, but we have hooked up the setting. So I was going to see if I can actually prove to you that if I now change the settings on the command line using the gsettings command line tool. I hope that something has happened. Yes, I mean, it was kind of less impressive than I wanted because the window was hidden, but you can see that the application actually picked up my font size change. Before it was monospace 12, and now it's monospace 20. But obviously, using the command line for these kind of changes is not ideal, so we want a preference dialog. So let's move on and construct that. Obviously, we use all the same things that we've already used. So we, again, write a template file for this dialog. This time, it's a subclass of GDK dialog, as you can see up here. And I'm not going to go through this in detail, but you can see that we populate it with some labels. And there's a font button that we're going to use for the font property, obviously. And a little further down, there's a combo box that we're using for this transition property, which has three possible values. And I'm specifying them right here in the template. And then, we obviously create a subclass of GDK dialog for this using this template. So there's all the same boilerplate that I showed you for our application window. Define type as private, all that business. And we do the same template binding that we did for our application window, and this time we do it for our preference dialog. We again obtain an instance of our settings here, prev settings. And again, we use the settings binding functionality to bind our settings. This time we bind them to the controls we have in the dialog to actually to change them. So for the font setting, we use the font chooser. And for the transition setting, we use this combo box. I didn't actually point that out, but the name of that widget in the template file was transition. And there's a lot more boilerplate here. One thing we still have to do is we created this preferences activated callback for the action, but it was empty, so we now need to go back to it and make it actually create a new instance of our preference dialog and present that. And let's go back and see how that looks. As you can see, our font settings changed from last run, got remembered across the restart. And I'm now clicking preferences again, and yay, there's our preference dialog. And it has the things that I pointed out earlier in the template. So there's our font chooser, it shows the value that we just set on the command line. And there's the combo box for the transition. I'm just going to briefly pause and show what that actually does. Change it to slide. And if I now change tabs here, it actually animates. So this is a new feature in GDK stack, as opposed to the old GDK notebook. We can actually do nice animated transitions here. The other one that I have here in the preference dialog, I'm going to show that as well, is a crossfade. So if I change it to that, then you can kind of see the crossfade happening here. So that's a nice new feature of GDK stack, which is made possible by all the frame-based drawing work that Owen did in the last year. OK, moving on. This application is starting to look like an application, but it's still fairly minimal. So we'll add a few more bits of functionality here. The next step that is fairly common in GNOME 3 application is search. That's obviously very central. So I'm going to show how to make a search entry here that looks somewhat similar to what we have in other GNOME applications. For that, we use GTK search entry, which is just a subclass of GTK entry that has a bit of extra functionality to make a search entry. Like it has a clear button and it has a extra signal that kind of batches the changes, things like that. And then we use GTK search bar, which is a newer widget, which lets you put a search entry and maybe some other UI that you might need in relation to that inside a toolbar, more or less, that can slide in from the top. And let's see how we actually use those. Yeah, so we're going back to our template for our application window, and we add a few extra things here. Right here, we add a toggle button to the header bar. It'll be much easier to see that when I run the application, but I'm just pointing out how this looks in the template. And a little further down, between the header bar and the stack, we now put a search bar. And the search bar contains a search entry. And what we also do here is we hook up the signal handler for the search changed signal of the search entry right here in the template file, so we don't have to manually call gsignal connect in our code. So once again, this reduces the amount of manual code that has to be produced. And obviously, implementing search actually takes quite a bit of work. I'm not going to go through that in detail here, but I just wanted to briefly show that there's the beef of this work is having a signal handler here, search text change, which gets called whenever you type a new character in your search entry. And then we'll do magic with text eaters to find the first match for that in our text. And going back to a live example again. So here it is. Now you can see this up in the right corner is the toggle button that I mentioned. If I click that, the search bar slides in with the search entry. And I can type something like run and it searches. So that's kind of neat. And if I hit escape, it hides again. So that's already pretty good. But we can squeeze in a little more functionality here before my time runs out. I think this is step 8 of 9, so I might actually get through my steps as opposed to Leonard. Sidebar. I really had to rack my brain to come up with some example that lets me put in as many of the new widgets as possible. So I came up with this. Let me know if that's totally ridiculous, but at least it gets the job done to let me show GTK menu button, GTK revealer, and GTK list box in one step. So once again, we go back into our template, and where I just showed you that we added toggle button, we now add a menu button next to that. That's down here, GTK menu button. And then we go a little further down, and where we used to have the GTK stack, we now wrap that inside a GTK box and put a little extra before it. It's actually a horizontal box, so we put something to the left, which is a GTK revealer that contains a list box in a scrolled window. And there's a little more XML here to show. I said that I put a menu button there. I didn't actually tell you where the menu is coming from. That's yet another builder UI file that I show here, which is really virtually identical to the syntax of the one that I showed you for the app menu. It's just another UI file to define a gmenu model. In this case, I just put a single item in there right now, just a label words and another action here, show words. And obviously, I need to tell you where that action comes from. So we go back to, and this is actually, to go back here again, I called the action show words, but actually the UI file says win.showWords. The win.dot part is the scope of the action. So the actions we saw before for the application menu were application scope actions, which we defined in the startup function of the application. But there can also be window scoped actions, And the convention here is that you refer to those by putting win dot as the prefix of the name. And obviously, a window scope action should not be defined in the application startup function, but it should be specific to the window. So we add that that action in the init function of our example window class. And the last three lines that I show here are actually where that happens. In this case, we use a settings action, which is a neat little, it's a neat way to take one of your settings. In this case, it's a setting called show words and just wrap an action around it. And activating the action will change the value of the setting. In this case, the setting is a Boolean, and the settings action will just toggle the Boolean every time you activate it. That's a very convenient way to make settings available to the UI in the form of actions. And with that, I'm switching back to showing you how that looks. Okay, so next to our toggle button up there, there's the gears menu now, the menu button. I click on it, there's the menu item that I just specified. And if I actually toggle it, the sidebar shows up. And you saw that it actually slides in. That's what the revealer is doing. That's the animated reveal. And inside the revealer, you see the list box here. List box, I could spend an entire talk just talking about GTK list box and what it does and what it doesn't do. But it is, essentially, it's just a container that is meant to contain lots of widgets, and it has functionality that you normally associate with the tree view. Like it can filter, it can sort the items that are contained in it. But the defining difference between this and the tree view is that each row is actually a widget. It's not a cell render, which is kind of a different layout model. So this is nice if you want to have a list, but you want to have actual UI in it that's not necessarily just data-driven giant data lists. And since I had to come up with something for this example, I just created buttons, one button for each word in my text. And if I click on one of those buttons, we search again. So at least there's some functionality here to make this example a bit meaningful. And if I may, and now you just saw the revealer hide itself again. So moving on. Almost there. This is the last step. When I was done with this, like first it had only 8 steps actually, and then Ryan came back to me and said, "Oh, can't you squeeze in like property actions? Because that's neat too." So I went back and I racked my brain a little more and tried to come up with some way of showing property actions. So what's that about? Widget and other objects obviously have lots of useful properties, and As I said earlier, the settings action that I just showed is a very convenient way to make settings accessible to the UI in the form of actions. And very similarly, gProperty action does the same thing for properties of widgets or other objects. And we'll see how that works. So I'm not going into all the details here, but I'm just explaining what's happening here behind the scenes. We would have to go back to our template again, and I'm adding two labels to the header bar. Their names are lines label and lines. I'm not actually showing the XML yet again. I'm just talking about it. And then we go to the UI file that defines the gear menu. And we add a second item there with the name lines and with a new action, show lines, which now will be a property action. So I have to show you how that is done. And again, it's done in the init function of our window class. And there it is. The first line there is gProperty action new. So we specify the name, show lines. And then we use the lines object. You probably expect by now that priv lines is another pointer variable in our private struct that gets magically populated by GTK window class bind template char, blah, blah. So that's a pointer to our label that we just added. And we use the visible property of the label, and we have another Boolean toggle action here. And yet another thing that I've squeezed in this last step is that not only can we do that, but we can also use object binding here, which is a nice way to basically connect properties of different objects and keep them in sync. So that's what we're using here to, as I said, we add two labels, but we always want them to become visible or invisible together. So we kind of just, we use gobject bind property to just connect the visible property of these two widgets. So when I show the first one, the second one automatically gets shown as well. Let me show you how it looks when I run it, and then, yes?
So the G object unwrap the action looks a bit silly to me. Are actions not floating? They're not floating? Okay. Well,
you just need to judge.
Okay.
Is there a reason for them not being floating, or?
Okay, so, last part of the demo. Here's our new menu item, lines. I just created that. If I toggle it, the two labels appear here. I haven't shown you the code for actually counting the lines in the text, but that's what it does. And if I change the tabs, it actually updates the line count here. And if I toggle the property again, both of them disappear at the same time because the two visible properties are bound together. And that was the last step. So I'm done with my examples. And I hope you enjoyed that. And if you have any questions, feel free to ask. Things to take away from this, I hope, are that it's actually really not hard at all to write a GNOME 3 style application using bits and pieces that are available in GTK master now. So with GTK 3.10, all of this will be at your disposal. And I actually did a line count on the last step here. The most complete example that I have comes down to some 500 lines of C code and some 200 lines of UI files. So that's not too bad considering it's C.
Did you pick your UI files later?
No, I did. I used VI for this. Yeah, but I hope Glade would be up to it as well. Where's Tristan? Yes. Maybe we can repeat the question with the mic.
Is there any documentation on the building side?
Yes, there's some. First of all, as I said earlier, these examples, including all the makefile integration and everything, is available in the GTK source tree. So you can go there and look how I actually did this with makefile.ams. And there's also various documentation. For instance, I pointed out at some point that we ship some macros in GIO actually for the schema compilation part. And there's a link there to the GIO documentation where that's explained. And maybe we have documentation for the resource part as well. I'm not actually sure about that.
Yeah, we need
yeah, okay. So some of this might not be wrapped in nice macros yet. But some of it is, and for the parts that are, there should be documentation somewhere inside the GIO documentation, but that's not necessarily easy to find. So I try to put links to that in this. Right, that's a good segue, actually. Yeah. So there's a nice new way of writing documentation called How Do I that Ryan kicked off and is drumming for, which that's available. I think, is there one about resources? Maybe not yet, but we should make one available. So if there's no more questions, the last thing I want to say is that. This is the location where you can actually find all of this online. This is the API documentation that I just walked you through. I will point out that I found a few bugs in the documentation when I went over this last night. So what I showed you was my local fixed build, and that will be all up online with the next GTK release. And this is the GTK sources, and you can see the 9 subdirectories where I ran these examples. Yes. Thank you. Next time.
Any more questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure.